You're listening to Geek Jabber Live, the show where the main host has a face for radio and a voice for silent movies. Strap yourselves in and dial up the disappointment. Welcome to Geek Jabber Live.
Yes, dial up the disappointment. We are supposedly live on this show now. Welcome to Geek Jabber Live. I am Tim, and we have two very special guest stars this evening, or whatever time it is. We have in Sydney, we have Nick. Hello, Nick.
Hey, guys.
And over in the country that looks like a floppy penis, otherwise known as Sweden, we have QWERTYs.
Hello.
Yes. You had to go there, didn't you, Tim?
Well, have a look at a map of Sweden and tell me it doesn't look like that.
Wait, I thought this was a family show. Am I in the wrong
room? Yeah. On the wrong show.
Yes.
No, thanks for having us, Tim.
Not a problem. Yeah, so thanks for the invite to
do this live on air, flying by the seat of our pants because we can. So I suppose we should do a little bit of introductions of who we all are. So I might just start with myself. I am the guy who does a lot of work on geekjabber.com, which is what this is all part of. So it's basically a site that's basically wanting to be, or plans to be, something for the casual gamer, the tech enthusiast, just writing about stuff that I feel like writing about, and hopefully get an audience. So, yeah, I'm the main guy behind it. Who wants to go next?
Oh, look, I might as well, seeing as I'm also in Australia. So my name's Nick. I'm from Sydney, Australia, and a good dear friend of Tim's as well. So I've known him for quite some time. I guess my background here is less about gaming and more about tech. I work for a government agency, and we won't mention any names, but my specialist here is cybersecurity, networking, things of that nature. So I'm here for the tech and for the chat, basically.
Yes. And Mr. QWERTYs?
Yeah, I guess you can say I'm the casual gamer in this group.
Enterprise.
And
Enterprise sounds like we're on some sort of sci-fi movie or something.
Well,
one day. Yeah, and I also work in the IT industry or technology industry. I manage computers and try to help people to find any key. And
and you tell them to turn it off and on again.
Yeah, that's happened. And I try to keep a bunch of servers running. But I always said that if you're sysadmin or administrator sits and plays games all day in his office, that means he's doing his job.
Everything's
servers are not crashing.
Yeah, you can call that network testing.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Load testing.
Yes.
Yep.
I suppose on that particular note, we should go towards, guide us towards the actual show. Conveniently, we've talked, sort of brought up the issue of computer security and network security. I just touched on it. We're talking about basically basic password security today, because that's one thing that a lot of people still actually get moderately wrong.
But not just moderately, they screw it up completely.
Yeah. So So going back to, we'll start with the very basics. What makes a good, strong password that's not going to be not going to cause you too many problems?
Look, ultimately, you're looking for long passwords, but not necessarily long as in lots of characters, although more characters help. What you're looking for is entropy, and that's just a fancy word of saying complexity when it comes to actual words. What you want to try and avoid, though, are single or maybe two-word dictionary words, which are easy to guess, or words combined with numbers such as your birthdays or, you know, birthdays of your loved ones or family and things like that. Those are particularly easily guessed, particularly with the increases in technology and the speed of being able to crack passwords. Those sorts of simple passwords, such as, you know, your name and your mum's birthday, for example, is quite easy to crack. Or if you just simply add an exclamation mark at the end.
Yeah.
What you want to be looking at. Yeah.
Password 123 is a terrible password.
Terrible password. So is some of the other examples. If you find an example of a password out there, don't use it because it's out there.
Yeah. So I'll be putting an article up on this on the site once the show's actually done. But sort of the article, to summarize what I've gone into the article, I've basically gone for two strategies. So one is, like, I generally consider probably about 12 or so characters is probably the minimum you want to go for. And you can either use either two strategies. One is similar to what you've suggested, which is basically getting at least 3, 4, 5 words that are relatively common, string them all together to give you a decent length password that is also fairly easy to remember, and maybe just chuck a number or a symbol in there as well, just to give it that little bit of extra complexity.
Yeah, and Tim, I think it's important to remember too, the spaces between words, they act as a symbol. So they're a special character in themselves. The words together don't have to make sense. They just have to be memorable to you. I would avoid using correct horse battery staple, which everyone knows from the XKCD cartoons, but think of 4 random words, and that in itself, even without any symbols, just put the spaces in between. Automatically, that is the way more secure than most of the passwords out there.
And the other one, the other one is basically use a password generator to generate basically a complete nonsensical password, just a random noise of at least 12 characters, and put that on and use a different one for each site. So if one gets compromised, it's only that account that gets compromised, so you can help limit the damage.
Absolutely.
Now,
sorry to interrupt, but I'd use the most common password managers have the ability to create or generate passwords.
Yeah,
that's a good
so
point.
You can get.
So that's what I was going to go into, because the downside of that technique, and like, it creates the most secure passwords. The downside is you're not going to remember them. So that's where pairing that technique with a password manager would be the way to go. So have the password manager manage your passwords for you. Mm. So you don't have to remember XK1299 exclamation mark brackets semicolon. And secure it with a password that is just a series of long words that are difficult to guess, but easy for you to remember.
Not just words strung together, but random nonsense characters and digits and symbols can be really strong passwords as well. And I think, Tim, you raise a good point that you're not expected to remember every password for every service. And this raises 2 points. The first point is, if you can't remember the password, it's probably a good password. Secondly, don't reuse passwords for services. So if you've got one password for your email, for example, don't use that same password on a forum account or, you know, some other account. The general rule of thumb that I recommend is one account, one password, and store those in a password manager. Come up with a really strong password that you can remember to unlock that password manager or that password database, and then Doesn't matter if you remember the other passwords or not, it's irrelevant because they're in the in your password manager.
Yeah. And yeah, because the problem is like people think that, oh, I've got really nothing to protect, so I won't bother. Well, yeah, some people genuinely don't, but it's not just about protecting you. It's all if somebody can, for instance, get into a lot of your accounts, they can suddenly identity theft becomes a problem, and
100%.
Somebody can impersonate you. If somebody can get into your email, suddenly that's embarrassing emails or spam to everyone in your address book, which causes.
And I think you hit the nail on the head there, Tim. And as someone who's been involved in the investigation of ID theft in the past, it's, you know, you think about all the services that you have. You might have bills that come to your email box, like, you know, whether it be a phone bill or internet bill, things like that. Those can be used as points of ID in ID theft. And if a crook was to access your email, they have potential access to the rest of your accounts. They can access bills. They can use that as forms of ID. It's we're moving more and more to an online platform. You know, the days of having bills mailed to you as paper, those are long gone, realistically. Like, yes, you can still request it, but you need to think about what, if someone gained access to your email, what are they gaining access to? And
yeah, potentially also think about it. Yeah, I was going to say, also think about it as maybe you don't have anything to protect, but maybe people you have contact with, your family, friends, work colleagues, have things to protect, which they get a view into if they get access to your email or social media accounts.
And
you're protecting others.
Yeah, and I understand that it is a little bit tricky to set up. I've been a little bit lax, and over the last couple of weeks, I've actually been sort of doing a lot of changing of passwords and putting them into a password manager. Right now, I am up to about 50 different services. So, yeah.
50, wow.
So, for some people, it is a fair chunk, but the effort is worth it just to make sure that you don't become a target, because you could say that, well, there's the law to deal with it, but the problem with the law is that that will only help you after the event has occurred, whereas doing this sort of stuff will help prevent the security problems from happening in the first place.
Absolutely. And look, the law only extends so far. And obviously there's jurisdictional issues. We're in Australia here and Sweden with QWERTYs, but the law only gets so far, and it's impossible to investigate every single instance of ID theft or fraud or things like that. A lot of it goes, it just slips off into nowhere, and unfortunately victims just end up losing out.
Yeah, and going into sort of another area that's actually really good is a website, haveibeenpwned.com. So haveibeenpwned.com, and that's actually a really good website. So you can actually
Some password managers also have warning for you. They have a connection to the Have I Been Pwned site, so you can see if your password for one site being pwned.
So there's two sections that I've found to be really, really useful. One is the section where you can put in your email address, and you can work out if your email address or any of your email addresses have been involved in a large-scale data breach.
Yeah, and not just email too, Tim. I think it's important to realize that you can insert your phone number as well, and it will bring up whether your phone number has been involved in a breach as well.
Yeah, so phone numbers as well. So it's a really good way of that. That doesn't necessarily mean your account has been hacked, but it means your account is more at risk of being hacked.
Someone's got access to that information, essentially.
Yeah. So it's a good way of...
Should mention also, you should fly home team flag. The guy who runs Have Been Pwned, Troy Hunt, he's Australian, I believe. So go Australia.
Oh, there you go.
Go Australia. But yeah, the other part of it, as QWERTY alluded to, was the fact that you can put a password in and look, and you can actually test to see whether that password has been compromised in a data breach.
Yeah.
And a lot of services will actually now, there's an API that you can connect to that will actually basically tell you. So a lot of password managers and other tools will actually test for that.
Mm.
And
that's a really good feature.
Yeah. And the good thing about it is, there's kind of an additional layer of security. The complete password does not get sent to their servers when you use the API. Basically, it encrypts it and to create a hash and only sends the first half of the hash over and sends back any passwords that might match. So it basically...
So the site never actually gets your password
as such.
It just matches the hashes that come... That it knows about.
Yeah, that it knows about. So it might pick up a few hashes that aren't your password just happen to match, but it's probably better to get it saying it's compromised too many times than to say it's not been compromised.
But I think it's a good indicator that, if your password is flagged as, potentially compromised or insecure, don't use it. Come up with something else.
Yeah.
And speaking of Have I Been Pwned, I'm just having a look at some of the latest breaches that have come up. And one of them is Audi USA, actually. And over 2.7 million accounts of Audi customers have been compromised. And we're talking about things like email addresses, VIN numbers for your vehicles, social security numbers, which, is a big thing over in the US. If you've got someone's SSN... you essentially can mimic that person or open accounts in that person's name. So that's just one example of the latest breach in that's occurred. And then there's many, many other examples, much bigger examples too.
Yeah. So, quite a lot of, stuff could get out. So yeah, that's why having good protection, like in the way of strong passwords, is really useful. It doesn't guarantee that it won't happen, but it significantly reduces the likelihood that you're going to get caught up in that.
Absolutely. And you can always use the Notify Me feature on that website too. So if you register your email address, they'll email you if your email address pops up in a data breach anywhere. So that's a useful feature. And then that gives you that heads up to say, hey, look, maybe I should change my password or review the security for that particular account.
Yeah. And that's why it's important to only use your password on a single account.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that,
And I think Google and for Chrome and Firefox have where they check your passwords also against. Yeah. Have I been pwned, so that can tell you that this password have been used in breaches.
Yeah, so I know with sort of bringing it back home a little bit with the Geek Jabber site, I've actually got a security plugin to help reduce the chances of the site being compromised.
And we're one of the good guys.
Yeah, and we're and one of the features that I have enabled is that same feature. So anybody who has an account that can log in to write for the site, their passwords get checked against that same database and it'll actually flag it and say, and will actually stop you from using a site password that's been compromised.
Mm. So Tim, if I can recap, I think it's important to create, use a password manager to start and keep that password manager secure if it's offline, or make sure it's one of the reputable ones. you know, 1Password is one of them. LastPass is another good one. And make sure you're using separate passwords for each account that you have, and make sure those passwords are strong. So either they're long passwords of random dictionary words, or they incorporate special characters, numbers, uppercase, lowercase, things like that.
Yep.
And don't use your name or date of birth.
Yes. Yes, that's just silly. But anyway, going
on. Or your dog that you take photos of and put on Instagram.
That's the thing, yeah. If you release details publicly on Instagram or Facebook or any of that sort of thing,
yeah,
don't use any of that. Don't use your kids' names. Don't use your pet names. None of that.
Yep.
But I believe QWERTY's has something for us.
Yeah, so basically what I've been sort of given QWERTY the task of, the game Quake turns 25 this year.
Yeah.
Is it 25 years old?
It's 25 years old, so I'm really starting to feel old now because I remember when that game actually first came out.
You're talking about the original Quake 1 on DOS.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Wow.
So I've been playing it a bit, trying it out, and I like it, actually. It's boxy graphics, but they... Yeah. Improve the graphics so you have like an HD or 4K.
Yeah.
You can have it in HD or 4K.
So hold on, rewind a second. Have they re-released the old Quake now on modern platform?
They have re-released it. In fact, one of the new news articles I actually put up up on the site is a company known as Limited Run Games have also been doing have been doing collector's edition packs to celebrate 25 years, which basically includes, you know, you can buy, there are three different packs you can choose from, and you get a whole heap of additional memorabilia.
Actual physical packs that you can order?
Actual physical packs. And they go up to 150, like the most expensive one is about $150 US. So some of them they're charging through the nose for, but
look, if you're a hardcore sort of old school gamer that grew up with Quake, I think you could probably spare that, couldn't you?
There are some people that are that dedicated to the game that
and I believe they released it with original music. I think it was Nine Inch Nails also. They have
They did the audio track for it, didn't they?
Yeah. So,
what's your impression of it now that you've actually been playing it a little bit? Because I've tuned into a couple of your streams where you've been streaming it, and you seem to be enjoying it. So I just want to see, sort of, given it's now a quarter of a century old, how do you think it's sort of stood up to the test of time?
Well, the graphics are, even if it's in HD, it's boxy, but it's a good gameplay, actually. I'm enjoying it. I mean, I tried things like, what's the other shooter games? Well, I tried Rainbow Six, and I tried others. But this is more fun action play, and actually kind of hard if you get up in the levels. So, if you don't mind... boxy retro graphics a bit, so
well, that's basically isn't it?
What?
That's basically Sorry? Minecraft, isn't it? Boxy graphics.
Which I kind of play also, so I'm used to it. boxy graphics.
Yeah,
it's always like we've done full circle. Like you know, you used to be able to play these sorts of games on, you know, 386, 486 PCs, and there was no 3D acceleration back then. Like, forget about that. But then we've done this whole full circle where you need this powerful GPU to recreate the old graphics from the 80s and the 90s. Well, it's hilarious.
Yeah, sort of. I mentioned that from what I remember at the actual time. So there was a bit of a lead up to Quake. So you had Wolf 3D, which
basically Wolfenstein 3D.
Yeah, Wolfenstein 3D,
yeah.
Which was the game I think that basically started this all off. and that ran on a potato. You did not need an impressive machine to do that. Then they sort of upped the game a bit with Quake, but sorry, not with Doom. I'm skipping over Doom. They basically went to Doom, which was the same engine, but with sort of marginal improvements. But when that, but there was sort of a big, sort of a bigger jump, I think, from Doom level to Quake level. If I'm remembering things right. So there was sort of a fairly big jump from Wolf to Doom, but Quake is when it this graphics started to get really, really good.
Yeah, look, we weren't going to talk about Wolfenstein 3D tonight, but I just have to point out the minimum requirements for Wolf 3D was you're talking about a 286 processor, so you know, single-digit megahertz territory, and 640K of conventional memory for those that are old enough to remember that.
So to give you an idea, the 286 was about 1984, wasn't it? It was sort of really early on.
Oh yeah, look, it lasted for a while, that CPU. So did the 386.
Yeah.
Yeah, was going to say also that it's fast. I mean, if you have like games like PUBG, Rainbow Six, it's sometimes the frames lag and the graphics, if you don't have the latest graphics card, is slow, but it's very fast and it's not complicated. You basically run around in a maze and shoot things, which can be fun and very defrustrating if you are frustrated.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's fast gunplay.
Have you got any cheat codes to share with us?
Sorry, I'm trying to learn the game, and I'm trying to find the secrets in the game. There are lots of
So I think cheat code is www.qwertyisawesome.com.
Don't go to that website.
No,
it could be dodgy.
Not safe for. Family shows. Yeah. I know I played some PUBG, for instance, and it's complicated. You have to keep track of guns, you have to do this and that, and just that fun thing of running around and shooting, I think.
So QWERTYs, for someone who's a complete noob to gaming, which is myself, how does one obtain Quake on a modern PC?
Either if you got Steam or if you got Windows, Xbox, Game Pass, for instance. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got it from or via the Xbox Game Pass.
Yeah,
but you can try for 1 month for free, I think.
Yeah.
But if you have, I know some people who like the game on Linux. And you can run it on Steam via Linux, and I think it's Lutris and Vulkan pronunciations. So you can run it if you have Steam. Also on Linux.
I don't know what they're doing with the Game Pass versions, but I know with because I've got the Steam version of Wolfenstein 3D, and essentially what they've done is they've got the original game. So they have, with Wolfenstein 3D, that is one of the ones they have not updated yet, I don't think. So it's all the original game, all the original graphics, and they've just packaged it so that they've basically packaged it in a way that's pre-configured to use DOSBox. So it's basically, it uses DOSBox, fires up the game, so the original game will run on a modern machine. And they've done all the hard work of configuring it all for you so that it just works. So I'd imagine they've done similar things to in the Game Pass versions for the original versions. And I think it's that DOSBox layer is also what gives it compatibility on Linux.
One thing also that in the old days you could play LAN or LAN, how do you pronounce it? LAN games against others, but in the new Quake release, you can play online multiplayer.
Yeah.
Against others at servers.
Yeah. Well, so, that's actually a good thing. So it sounds like they've basically brought integration into the Game Pass services and Steam services to allow multiplayer. Because the final point I was going to make is that the original LAN play runs on used to run on the old Novell protocols, which nobody uses anymore because we've all gone.
Well, funny that we've all gone TCP/IP.
So I'm glad they've actually done that because it basically means that the multiplayer versions will basically still function if you want to play network games.
Yeah. And if you like I think it was Quake 2 Arena, you can play that also. And the Quake 3. Well, they released all the Quakes.
Yeah.
So if you don't like the boxy original version, you can play the Arena version, for instance.
And it looks fairly reasonably priced. Looking at the pricing, Quake, the original Quake, is $15 Australian at the moment on Steam, and Quake 2 is cheaper, $8 Australian. Yeah. And they all seem to be supported by Windows and Linux. So if you enable the Proton option, you should be able to play this on Linux as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I think
which is a good point that we shouldn't forget the Linux game player.
We should be promoting Linux. So for those of you that hate Windows 10, and there's a lot of you out there, I know that, try and learn Linux if you've got a bit of technical skills. Learn Linux, and games actually run surprisingly well.
Yeah, and I know some versions of Linux have it more or less pre-installed. So if you install a certain distribution of Linux, you can get... you can more or less just start up the Steam client and download your library.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think that's a topic for another night.
Yes. We're delving into rabbit holes here.
Yeah. Have to go some rabbit holes.
Yes. And we're going on the fox hunt. Yes. Anyway, I think it's... probably time to wrap up our first show. So thank you to anyone who has listened in, and thank you to anyone who downloads this show in the future. Mm-hmm. I do have a little bit of announcement before we wrap up.
Are you going off script? What's going on?
Well, the script has been replying. So in preparation for the first show, the first podcast, I have actually set up a Patreon account for Geek Jabber. So you can, if you want to provide financial support for the show, you can do that. So there's a link all on the site. So if you go to geekjabber.com, there's social networking links at the top. One of them is the Patreon link. And it also comes up in the sidebar of any review that you read. You can also go to patreon.com/geekjabber, and that will take you straight through to our page. I'm not expecting to make millions of dollars out of this, but it's there if anybody wants to help support the site and help us invest in stuff to extra review. And on that note, I should also mention... Yes, the site is there, geekjabber.com. We also have the Discord in the link there, and also a Twitter account. So if you want to join the community, you can. And I think on that note, it's probably time to wrap up. So thank you to Nick, and thank you to QWERTYs for joining us tonight.
No worries.
And it was fun.
Yes, it was... It was sort of fun just sitting here and having a bit of banter about stuff
we
obviously know a little bit about.
Yeah.
Geeks jabbering.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I think it's, we're a bit rough around the edges at the moment, but hey, who knows what's to come.
Yes. Yeah, well, we're all learning as we're going with this. There's a little bit of learning that will happen, and I'm sure we'll get better as time goes on.
Well, look, thank you for having us, Tim, and inviting us along, and hopefully we'll be back for another episode.
Hopefully so.